For August the 11th, 2023, we talk about Master Detective Archive Rain Code, Decarnation, Severed Steel, and much more. Welcome to Level 468. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
And I'm Jala Prendez.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jala.
Hi, I'm here. What's up? How y'all doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm curious how you're doing.
Well, there's usually an adventure story between the times I'm on the show. My birthday happened. Barbie is a good movie. I'm going to be doing a podcast about that on my show eventually. But after the SAG-AFTRA strike. So anyway, then both my car and Dave's cars broke.
Ugh.
And we only just got those fixed, but they are now fixed. So that's good news.
Broke in what way? Like what specifically fucked up with them?
Well, on mine, it was some tire stuff, tire sensors and some other things going on. The reason why this is a problem is because I have to have my car inspected this month. So I had to get everything all squared up. And so there were some issues with the tires and like inflation and also like the sensors were jacked up as well. Multiple things. And I also had to replace the sway bar links on mine. Because they were cracked. Cool. So
yeah, it's always fun when you learn that they're just like, oh no, this thing totally just, if you hit a bump the wrong way, guess what? You're in a Flintstones car now.
yeah. So that was some things wrong with mine. Dave's has apparently like the particular make model year of his car has abysmal wiring. And so there were multiple electrical issues and his shocks went out. So,
good Lord.
We had to replace his shocks and also, get the wiring inspected multiple times. And then they had to fix some things and it's not done yet. There will be more replacements that need to go on because basically all the wiring is shit.
Yeah. So. That sucks.
Yay. But the good news is today, Tim, a.k.a. Frothy Ham, bought me Baldur's Gate 3 out of nowhere. It wasn't even for my birthday. It was just like randomly today that that he just gave me this game, which is very sweet of him. I thought I was going to play it 7,000 years from now.
Uh-huh.
But well, now I have to figure out.
Because that's how long it takes to download with all the cutscenes.
No, actually, like I plugged it direct to my Ethernet because Dave got me a dongle for my Steam Deck and it didn't take very long at all. It was like, I don't know, 15 minutes.
Really? Yes. Wow, nice.
Yeah, so that's cool, except now I have to figure out when I'm going to play it and also play it together with John and Desiree and Dave, you know, my usual four-player crew, like the ones that went through the Pokemon Sword game, all those hours. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're going to try to do Baldur's Gate, but to find time to play with them, to find time to play my solo, and then also all of my assignment play.
Yeah, no, you're in the content mines now.
I'm in the content mines.
Horrendously stupid question.
Sure.
Is Baldur's Gate multiplayer?
There is a multiplayer. You can play multiple different ways with different folks, and you can play up to four folks.
Oh.
It's made by Larian, the same people who did the Divinity Original Sin games.
Ah, okay. Those are multiplayer, but my opinion is that you should not play Divinity multiplayer. But obviously, I don't know how that applies to Baldur's Gate. I, for whatever reason, I had Baldur's Gate in my mind as like the consummate single player experience.
I mean, previously, yeah.
Okay. So this is a new edition.
Yes.
Okay.
So I
love how much we're sneaking video game talk into.
I know. Well, so I good. Just, I'm not going to talk about it in the grind because all I did was make my character. But I did make a half elf paladin. Usually I do like a bard or a sorcerer or a wizard or something, or like a fighter slash some kind of caster multi-class. But this time I was inspired by the D&D movie and the character Zink, and I decided I would be Big Smashum's holy guy. So I will be Jaslyn Rockhart, the half elf paladin.
Nice. Yeah,
that's all.
I would very much like to play it, but it's one of those things where also it's time, and also like I do not know when we're going to do it for the show.
Yeah. And you don't want to
so much time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just I'm very happily unfocusing my eyes on social media as people as people post about it.
Yeah.
I'm very happily unfocusing my eyes on social media, period.
Well, yes. Yeah. Dennis, how about you? You had a big weekend.
I had a huge weekend. It was Gen Con, baby. I went with all the Deck of Wonders stock that I had left on hand. There's still stuff with the distributor, but I had a stuff like with me. And my goal was like, hey, I want to sell through this by the end of the con. Like that would be great. If I come home empty handed, at least in terms of Deck of Wonders stuff, that will be a success. And y'all, I was sold out on Friday night. Didn't even make it to the weekend. So thrilled. So many people came and played and had wonderful things to say. It helps. I think I mentioned before that Lauren, the illustrator, was the cover artist for the Gen Con program this year. Just a ton of people like picking up the game so they could get it signed by her, which is freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. It went literally as well as it could have on the Deck of Wonders front. But that's also if my voice sounds a little more raggedy than usual, that is also why. It's at top volume for 4 days straight, demoing nonstop. So that was an experience. Really happy with that. I did get to have some fun. I went and saw a Blades in the Dark actual play session. Cool. with my favorite podcast network for actual play stuff, and that was phenomenal. They have a giant like pinball tunnel at Gen Con.
Cool.
The connector between Lucas Oil Stadium where I was doing my demos and then the main event hall where Lauren had the game in her booth is just pinball tables along the wall the entire way.
Nice.
So I went and just played my heart out. It's like a mini competition. They give an award for the top person at each table at the end of the weekend. Got up to third on The Mandalorian. Was really, really on a hot streak, and then just it got too late at night, and my focus was wavering. I knew I didn't have it in me, so I had to call it. But it was an absolute blast. I played The Mandalorian. I sampled a bunch of stuff, but I spent time on The Mandalorian pinball table, and then the Pirates of the Caribbean table.
Okay.
And that table is rad as hell, but kept on breaking.
Oh yeah.
So it was so much fun. But eventually I was just like, I can't, every other game is ending, because it loses a ball or has some problem. And it's
You shouldn't have to hang with that.
Yep. So, Mandalorian worked great. Actually, pretty much every other table that I played, was in great condition. And with that many physical pinball tables, that had to just be a Herculean effort.
Oh yeah,
on the people that kind of put up that event. So kudos to them for having it, everything work as well as it did. It was just in general an amazing con.
That's awesome. Well, I'm mm-hmm. really happy that it was successful business wise and also, getting to do cool stuff wise.
Yeah. So kind of a quick follow up to that is, because I sold out of in person product, I made sure that I got Deck of Wonders finally up on Amazon. And so that is very new. If anyone is interested in checking the game out, it is finally just like you can go search for it on Amazon, it's there and you can get it.
Woohoo.
And that is the final frontier, I guess, before thoughts of a reprint campaign start dancing around. So Gen Con was awesome.
Wonderful awesome. To hear. Yeah. No, I probably shouldn't have had to go after that because I don't have an awful lot exciting.
You didn't have your cars break or a once a year 4 day gaming event?
No. My brother and I built a fence.
Yay!
Oh hell yeah!
Yeah, I've talked about this in the past, like the trying to solve the problem of my patio. On one whole side of my house, it's like a 24 foot long, just concrete slab patio that I've done nothing with because everybody can see you when you're out there. Mm-hmm. It's not that I want to go out there and I almost said sky bathe instead of sunbathe. So that's about where I'm at right now. And so it's nothing like that. It's just, it's hard to feel comfortable when people can see you. Mm-hmm. So
it's like a Truman Show vibe.
A little bit. Yeah. And you know, I know nobody's actually looking at me and paying attention to me, but also you just privacy is nice. So over the course of like a couple of days, not full days, but just working around the weather, like dug the post holes, sank the posts, put up the boards. We only have a little bit left to do, but like I've got like a nice fence where like nobody can see directly in if I decide to keep the blinds on that on those French doors open. Nice. To get a little bit of light in, you know. So I'm going to top it off with some, like sun shade sail things or whatever.
Nice. Yeah.
Get those up in lieu of like a whole awning kind of deal. Maybe get a hammock back there. I don't know. Get it nice and ready for fall, enjoying being outside in the cooler weather. So that is my, that is my update. And I am quite happy with it.
So we actually put a hammock, in our backyard recently. Mm. A much smaller project overall. And I'm not typically a hammock guy. Like, I don't know. I've just never been sold. But having it so easily accessible is starting to bring me around. So I support your hammock plans.
Yes. I don't know. I've just, always liked a hammock. Mm-hmm. So not a better thing to lay in if you want to read is my opinion there. So
one wrong move away from dumping yourself into the dirt is just thrilling.
It is.
You have really try, in my experience, to dump yourself out of the hammock. So
I must be doing something wrong.
In my experience, it is harder to get out of them than it is to get in. Yeah. So but I've got my sea legs under me as far as hammocks go. I have experience with them. So
your hammock legs?
Yes. I'll have like before and after pics when the project is finally done. But
yay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
We already talked a little bit about games, but I would like to talk more about games if we can. And to do that, we have to do the regular kind of show. What with Grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, customarily, since you've been away the longest, I will go to you first.
Okay, so the first thing I will hit you with is more replay stuff for shows. That aforementioned SAG-AFTRA strike and the fact that I will not be releasing the Barbie episode when I was going to release the Barbie episode, I am now going to be doing an episode about Portal and Portal 2, Portal as an IP, with Dennis, who is on this podcast. Woo-hoo! Also Ben, who is also on this podcast, just not today. And then Matt from Fun and Games Podcast. So it's going to be a wonderful old time. And as a result, I've been playing those games again. And it's been at least 7 or 8 years since the last time I actually played them. Mm-hmm. Other than like the co-op, I've done the co-op more recently than that, but you know, overall just played the single player story mode. And they're still really, really fun, really challenging. Although some of the co-op stuff in Portal 2 is way farther along the challenging spectrum because of just having that many portals and multiple characters and everything. So anyway, this was actually Dave's first time to see the single player story. He'd done some of the co-op with me before, but he hates puzzle games. So like, he just was like, I'm never gonna, and I'm like, but you gotta see it. And he's like, I'm never, never gonna ever. But when I was playing it, he would stop whatever he was doing to watch me, especially in Portal 2. So yeah, they are still wonderful games, y'all. And I know you recently had some Portal talk with Dennis, so.
Yeah, I'll be bringing the fresh newcomer perspective to Portal 2, at least, because as we talked last time I was on the show, yeah, I somehow missed it until just now. So I'm very much looking forward to talking Portal with you, talking Portal with Ben, and you know, everyone that's going to be on. But yeah, it's a you know, I think that comes up on the list of games I wish I could go back and play for the first time. So I'm trying to appreciate that as I am going through it for the first time.
Yeah. And the thing that's funny about Portal is that I probably would have played it way, way earlier, like when it had first come out. My sister kept on going on and on and on about this game. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? She's trying to explain it to me in words. You know, let me paint you a picture of how this game works. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't see the appeal here until I actually played it myself, like many years later.
You really do. Like, I, you know, just when it came out in the orange box, it's like, okay, what the hell is this? I'm here for Team Fortress 2. Mm-hmm. And just, okay, Portal. And then I saw like a video, this is back in 2007, so I don't even know what site it was on, but it was like a trailer where they showed off how momentum is conserved in between. And they said, you know, speedy thing go in, speedy thing come out. And suddenly everything clicked for me. And I was like, oh, this is the real shit. Like, this is mm-hmm. gonna be everything for a while.
Yeah.
I could not imagine trying to describe it in words.
I know. And so that's why it was so funny when my sister was trying to tell me, and I'm like, does it have co-op? And she's like, yeah, it's got, the second one has co-op and mm-hmm. this, that, and the other. And you play the little robot guys. And again, she's trying to tell me in words, and I'm just like, okay, like mm-hmm. unconvinced here. I've got a whole lot of games to play. So anyway, yeah, I don't have anything new to say about Portal. Like in terms of like a brief summary of stuff, it's still a real good game. I don't know. Like yeah. going back and playing it doesn't feel unfamiliar or anything. Like I still remembered some of the puzzles and other ones. I was like, wait, oh yeah, I remember now, you know, that kind of a thing on the replay. But yeah, good times.
Nice.
So that's the first one. I don't think anybody has questions about this.
No, I was just saying, do you want to me to interject my Portal thoughts now, or should we save them all up? Or
do it.
Yeah. So the only thing I have to say as I'm continuing through, is I've reached the part where everything goes off the rails and you have a significant location change.
That's the fun part.
it is. And I'm now getting introduced to Cave Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just making me miss GLaDOS so freaking hard.
Like, oh yeah.
There's nothing wrong with him or his recordings as a villain, but it just,
it's J.R. Stallings, the guy who plays J. Jonah Jameson.
I know.
J.K. Simmons, baby.
Yeah. J.K. What is it? Where am I getting Stalling? Okay, Simmons.
I don't know.
Okay. So something something with an S. That guy. You know, like this is why I don't fucking know anybody's names. Here's your proof.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And there's nothing wrong with the performance. I would even go as far as say it's a great performance. Like, yeah, there's a lot to like there, but it just,
it's not GLaDOS.
Exactly. It highlights just how amazing every iota of the GLaDOS performance is. So I don't know her voice actor off the top of my head, but
Ellen McClain.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, she freaking crushed it in a way that I didn't know things could be crushed. And I look forward to when she re-enters the game. No shade to J. Jonah Jameson. But yeah, that's kind of the big thing. It's, you know, puzzles are still fun. And it's very intriguing watching them kind of get into Portal lore much more than I feel like they did in the first game.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, that's fun. But man, if this was just the GLaDOS show, I would be a happy camper.
Yeah.
I will look forward to hearing what you have to say when you get to certain parts.
Yes. You know, we should probably spend a whole podcast on that.
Yeah, we should probably like dissect all of that. Yeah.
So if three quarters of the people are level people, can we call it like an unofficial non-sanctioned bonus level?
I mean, if you want to get sued, yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff. Jala, I didn't mean to cut in if you had more than you were playing.
No, I had nothing on that. I have other games that I did play, though.
Go for it.
Cool. So the next game that I played is Pocket Mirror Goldener Traum, which is a mouthful of a name. You can just
bless you. What have you been playing?
The fact that it has a tilde in it and a concatenation of two words, one of which is incomplete, makes me think this is an anime visual novel.
Yay! You got it right. Congratulations, Cole. But it's actually not a visual novel though. It's a horror adventure game, pixel horror adventure game.
Oh, cool.
Along the lines of like a Corpse Party.
Okay.
So the original version of this game, because this one is not the original. The original is just Pocket Mirror. It's been renamed Pocket Mirror Classic at this point. Mm-hmm. So original version came out in 2016, and it's available online right now as freeware. So you can go pick that up somewhere. You just Google it and find it. This one, though, is a remastered version, which released in May of this year. This is an RPG Maker horror adventure game. Published by Komodo and developed by Astral Shift and Visu Stella. And the creators cite inspirations as Puella Magi Madoka Magica, Rosen Maiden, and Alice Madness Returns, as well as the RPG Maker games Ib and The Witch's House. And I don't know about the RPG Maker games. I have not played either of those. But as for the first three things I mentioned, I definitely see those inspirations in what this game is doing. So if any of those things are things that you like, this might be something to check out. There is a demo, and the demo is like a good half hour or so of the gameplay. So in this game, you wake up as an amnesiac inside of a haunted mansion with nothing but your clothes and your pocket mirror. You have to explore and solve puzzles both in order to escape, but also to hopefully remember something about who you are and why you're there. And the setting is really fantastical, very colorful, but with lurking darkness and creepiness. Like, there's lots of macabre stuff going on. This game has 7 endings you can get depending upon your choices throughout. And if you get certain items, there's also a new game plus mode where you can keep some of those items from playthrough to playthrough. There is an anime opening, as you might imagine. There is voice acting. It's Japanese voices only. And as with Corpse Party, the descriptions and sound effects are doing a lot of the heavy lifting, but this game has more on-screen animation than Corpse Party does. So I will also say the music is very, very good and worth having a listen to, keeping mm-hmm. the sound on for this. As this is a bit of an older adventure game, though, there are some puzzles to solve or actions that you have to perform in a certain sequence that you don't really get clues to that. And so you end up like banging your head against it a little bit until you figure out that, you know, through trial and error, what they want you to do. There aren't a lot of these, at least however many hours I've been in the game so far. It's not as bad as like a Corpse Party in terms of that kind of opaqueness. Yeah. So if that idea turns you off, rest assured it's not all the time. There's just a few parts. Mm-hmm. I am a good chunk into it, a couple of hours at least. I don't know how long the actual game is. When I looked it up, I think it was something like 5 hours. So I don't know. It's maybe halfway-ish. There aren't really any chapter guides or anything, so I don't know, about that.
There needs to be a government grant to get text walkthroughs back on the internet.
Yeah. Because like video walkthroughs writers and stuff are a pain in the butt, in my mm-hmm. opinion. I don't ever want to look at a video walkthrough. I just want text. So anyway, like I did play the demo. I ended up, because the way I do stuff, I explore everything 100 million times and look at every single dongle and click it multiple times to see if it has different text. So I played the demo for like a full hour. and then I bought the game and continued on from there. And I'm really enjoying it. And there's a bunch of different characters that you meet along the way that end up joining your party as well. So like, it's not just your one single player. You can also toggle between who is your primary character to interact with objects and stuff in the world.
So. Oh, cool. And is there like a different result when that happens? Like, do you have to choose different people to solve puzzles more accurately?
Different people will get different responses from stuff. And then there are certain areas where like the different people, like certain people are the ones that need to interact with X thing, you know, for one or another reason. They have familiarity with it. They know the whatever, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So but yeah, it's a very neat little thing that is like, I've been itching to play some kind of a Corpse Party since Corpse Party 2 was a depressing thing. And I happened to see the demo for this, played it, and was like, this is a similar itch. It's not the exact same thing as a Corpse Party, but It is doing many similar things in a very similar format, so I am having a good time with it.
Yeah. Well, it's good to hear that that niche has been filled. You know, again, just with the horrible disappointment that Corpse Party 2 was.
Well, I actually went on a spree of horror pixel game, like looking them up, putting them on my wish list. And then I also found another one that I played the demo of, which is the other game I played, mm-hmm. which I can talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
the other one I've heard about.
Yeah. So the other one that I picked up the demo for and tried and ended up picking up was Decarnation. And it's an atmospheric psychological pixel horror adventure by Atelier QDB, published by Shiro Unlimited. It came out in May of this year. And the creators cite inspirations for this one as Silent Hill, the original Alice in Wonderland, films by David Lynch and Satoshi Kon. Dave also says that you can see a lot of influence from Suspiria.
Yeah.
So this game is set in Paris in 1990. You play as Gloria, a cabaret dancer who dreams of more, but ends up at the end of her rope as all of her relationships and her career and her self-esteem are all just rapidly deteriorating. Everything is going to shit all at once. And so she's just unable to cope. Right about then, a mysterious patron makes her an offer that she cannot refuse. But of course, her vulnerability is exploited, and you toggle between the real world and Gloria's mind, where she battles her inner demons. So this narrative overall is very much like Satoshi Kon's Perfect Blue in theming. So if anybody knows that, then, you know, be aware that's the kind of thing you're working with here. The music is really good. And it also includes several ambient tracks by Silent Hill's composer, Akira Yamaoka.
That's what brought my attention to it. I was like, okay, how did they pull him?
Yeah. And they also have some vocal songs as well. That's like French pop music because the dev is like French developer. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty neat. The music is, again, bangers. Like the music in both of these two games is just really good. So the art style is really notably a more Western pixel style. You know, it's not like chibi anime characters. It's little super deformed Western style guys. The writing is phenomenal. Pocket Mirror is good, but Decarnation knows what it wants to express and how it wishes to express it visually, narratively, and auditorially. So, this feels really cohesive with incredibly strong art direction in particular.
I mean, the body horror stuff on display here, like just from a sheer creepiness and otherworldliness kind of sense, looks amazing to me. And also the animation, oftentimes with pixel art games like this, especially things that are no shaded stuff in RPG Maker, but stuff that feels like it is in RPG Maker, animation is kind of de-emphasized. Here you have lots of very good like pose work, lots of very just snappy and let's just say like slithery movement going on.
And that said, though, like I'm talking a lot of sugar, but I do want to say that this game does jump between multiple different modes of play. And that has turned several people off. You know, the people who have complaints about this game usually are complaining about the gamification. So it wants you to interact with it in a variety of different ways, which interrupts the story for the sake of giving you more verbs. So it's not a visual novel or a walking sim. It's trying not to be one of those things by having you do stuff. But the problem is that's not particularly additive. It doesn't make the story more impactful, in my opinion, or give you any particular feeling of agency. Again, like I'm a couple of hours into this. I think I'm just shy of halfway through or something like that. So like I haven't seen the entirety of the game yet, but at this point, this is my opinion. So some of the examples of the gamification, there is a rhythm game to do when Gloria is performing on stage and at other parts. There's only one song for all of the rhythm game segments, and I could do without that.
Yeah.
Then interacting with the world as Gloria goes about her daily tasks, like helping her to shower and work out and put on her clothing. I can do without that. I don't really need to toggle the buttons to make her put her shirt on or whatever. You know,
it's some Quantic Dream kind of nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess to some degree, they're just trying to make you feel like I guess her loneliness or something through the just like the boring repetitive stuff, but like that doesn't make a good game, you know? So no. You can also dodge demons and scream at them to make them vanish, and that was okay. That was okay. I don't have a problem with that. And then there's also interactive puzzles, of course, and this is a hallmark of this type of game, so that is also fine, but there's just some extra little bits that are a different mode of interaction that people are having a problem with. And they kind of irritate me, and you all know that I bounced off to the moon several times, and the last time when I was halfway through, I bounced off because the gamification was so random and unnecessary to me. However, Decarnation is telling a really gripping story without the pacing problems that I had with To the Moon, and has a much stronger sense of itself and its inspirations. So for me, this one, I'm not having as much of a problem with the gamification, even if I don't care for some of it, you know, but basically they should have just cut out some of the interactions to keep things more streamlined, but oh well. Yeah. I do definitely want to finish this, and I'm looking forward to providing a final report on this in the future whenever I have completed the game.
Nice. Mm-hmm. It sounds rad, even with the, press up and down to move the mop.
Right. Yeah. And like, I will say the urge to play something that is Corpse Party-ish is being scratched by Pocket Mirror. It is not actually being scratched by Decarnation. Decarnation is like its own thing over there. It's kind of related, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
So like, if you like a Corpse Party, if you like, you know, those kinds of pixel horror things, both of these are good for pixel horror folks. The Pocket Mirror one is the one that is more like that Japanese style of pixel art stuff.
Nice.
And that's all I got.
Cool. Dennis, since you already talked a little Portal 2, it makes sense for you to go.
Yeah. So Portal 2 in progress. Today, actually, the patch for Diablo 4 to make the internet less angry dropped. And I've only gotten to spend a little bit of time with it, but the big thing that I noticed in the time I did play, was the increase that they did to mob density. And so now kind of across the board, especially in Nightmare Dungeons, just the number of enemies, that are in there at once is way, way higher. And man, it feels good. There's just numbers all over the screen, baby.
Yeah.
You can't take a step without running into a revenant or a ghoul or an undead this or that. So difficulty level feels about the same. But it just feels really good that when you use any skill, you're watching it hit so many more people. And especially because the class I'm playing right now is very centered around like pulling everyone to me
which class?
I'm playing a druid, and the big thing I've done is my ultimate. I added, a caged heart, which is something special for this season that pulls, up to 50 enemies around me to me.
Okay.
And so like now I feel like I'm actually getting up to 50, you know, like it's just a giant crowd of people to mash on. And that feels very good. So I need more time to suss out the other parts of the patch, but, continue to be having fun with that.
Is the internet any less angry? Because I have found when you try to appease people, it works every single time and does not piss different people off.
You know what? I made a good life choice. I left the Diablo 4 subreddit and went to low sodium Diablo 4. So I don't know. You know what? Everyone there seems pretty happy, and very reasonable. And, I have not looked back since. So, my corner of the internet is thrilled with it. Hmm. Cool. Yeah. So, I do have a new game, however, that I've jumped into, called Severed Steel, that I want to talk about.
Souls-like, right?
No. Hotline Miami / Super Hot-like.
Okay.
Yeah, so Severed Steel. It was free on the Epic Games Store a little while ago, and just seeing a video for it, I was like, ooh, that looks cool. Very, like, arena arcade shooter game. It almost has like a speedrunner feel to it, because the kind of core idea of the game is that you can do dives and you can do slides on top of your normal running and jumping, and only while you are diving or sliding or wall running as well, I guess, you cannot be hit by bullets.
Other
time you're vulnerable and you are fairly squishy and there are a lot of enemies on screen. And so you just need to make sure you are constantly pinballing around the level so that you don't take damage. And you're usually tasked with either clearing out all the enemies in an area or clearing out specific targets within an area before getting to an exit. And it's just this frenzied, chaotic romp around this level where you are constantly just moving full tilt. And it's like you almost find yourself doing passes on rooms, right? It's like, jump across the room and, well, I missed the enemy that time, but I'll get him on my next pass, turn around and dive back and all that stuff. Making it even better is that the right click, instead of being an ADS, is a bullet time slow-mo.
Okay.
And if you use it when you're not sliding or diving, it depletes very quickly. But if you use it while you're mid-dive or slide, it's much more generous with the amount of time that you have to aim. Mm-hmm. And so everything in this game incentivizes you to just be careening crazily everywhere. And it's so much fun.
Watching a GIF on the Steam page, like the first one they decided to feature showing gameplay, is your character hopping onto like an office cart kind of thing, and then riding along. Like, oh, this is a John Woo.
Very much so. Yes.
Yeah, it's a John Woo game. All you're missing is the doves. Yeah.
Exactly. And I would not be at all surprised if doves showed up at some point.
Oh yeah.
Two things that just put this over the top in terms of fun factor. The first thing is that while you're diving and you're like moving to aim, typically a first person shooter will kind of keep you anchored to a vertical viewpoint where, if you look down far enough, it'll eventually decide like that's far enough looking down. You have to stop now. While you're diving through the air, you have full rotational control.
It's a Dusk. Yeah, Dusk is the game that does that too.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And so you wind up just at these crazy angles and upside down and just twisting and turning. And like, even though you can't see your body, it's a first person shooter. It really evokes the crazy way you must be diving through these rooms. And that's just really fun where, through no planning of your own, you wind up pulling off headshots upside down as you crash through a window. Like, yes, please. That's what I want in a game. Hell yeah. So it does a great job doing that for you. And then fairly early on, you unlock an arm cannon. And I say that very specifically, the character is missing their left arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they find the perfect thing to strap onto it, Samus or Mega Man style, whatever. and this arm cannon specifically can blow through walls.
Rad. How have I never heard of this before?
I can't believe I missed it as well, because like I've talked before about like the gun ballet kind of shooter that I love so much, and this is squarely in that genre. Once you've ramped up and kind of gotten a feel for the crazy diving and shooting and twisting and turning and wall running, now all of a sudden it's like, yeah, but what if not walls? And you go from there. And that is just so satisfying, especially as, a lot of these areas that you're in are very office-y. Like it's kind of very tightly packed corridors and rooms, almost maze-like together. And so your ability to kind of build a mental map of where you are quickly, allows you to do so much cooler things, and nothing is more satisfying than sprinting down a hallway, diving and blowing open a wall at just the right place to expose the computer that you're supposed to be shooting in the next room or whatever it is. And it's just like, yes, I am the master of this world and nothing can stop me. Severed Steel. It is very, very fun. Highly recommend to anyone that likes those, arena shooter type games.
Yeah, no, I just repeat what I said earlier. I do not know how I didn't hear about this, because this seems, I mean, fun.
Yes, I believe the technical term is rad as hell.
Yes, yeah, I believe I've heard people say that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that, yeah, and that's what I've been playing this week. Cool. In addition to pinball and board games, etc.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I don't have much for mine. I finished up when I was streaming, I streamed My Friendly Neighborhood. This is the game I talked about. Dennis, I talked about this last week.
Okay, is the neighborhood friendly?
It's a little, you know, things are a little bit like, not like you'd expect. This is a survival horror game where you are sent to an old studio where a Sesame Street-like show was produced. The show has kind of come back online, even though nobody is there to run it. And you are going around in the studio that is full of a bunch of animate Muppets that are trying to hug you to death. Yeah, my opinion on it was positive last week and it remains positive this time. And it is all the more heightened for the fact that for all of the Five Nights at Freddy's comparisons, this conceit could draw. You know, like, oh, it is, again, it's like you're something like you remember from your childhood, but it's a little bit twisted. It doesn't go in on gore or jump scare, really. I think I can think of two jump scares in the entire thing. And it is not grotesque, really. And ultimately, what I came to at the end is, like, this is a survival horror game that does not have any of the horror aesthetics, but is identifiable as survival horror because of the mechanics and the way that the world is put together. Like, this, I did not find this game scary at all, which is fine. You know, a horror game cannot be scary, as contradictory as that may sound. But just all of the classic, like, Resident Evil, a little bit of BioShock thrown in there, some Silent Hill, all pulled into a game that aesthetically not really that, you know, not really that similar to any of the above. And I feel like that is a very interesting achievement.
Yeah.
Does it lean into survival then? Like, is it, you know, scarce resources and inventory management?
Yeah, it's scarce resources. You have limited ammo, although I ended with a lot of ammo because I was playing it very conservatively. Like, enemies will revive when you leave the room unless you duct tape them down. You know, and the enemies are always jabbering, you know, like they're, you know, Sesame Street Muppets that have gone crazy. When you tape them down, they will continue talking, but they will get more desperate for attention.
Yep.
I'm imagining, since I just played it, I'm imagining the, like, turrets from Portal, just like way more hyper.
Yes. Yeah. And it's so classic survival horror, down to the fact that when you complete the game, it unlocks a whole bunch of, like, harder difficulties and, like, alternate modes. It is meant to be, like, played again and speed run and stuff like that, just like a Resident Evil game would be. It's pretty neat. Jolly, you've been trying to cut in there a couple times, I think. You watch this. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it and I stopped watching it because I was like, oh, I probably want to play this game sometime myself. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, like, the characters, when they're jabbering and talking to you and, like, you tape them down and they're desperate for attention, like, they start trying to wheedle you, like, wheedle with you and, like, bargain and whatever, plead with you. And it's, it's pretty wild stuff. But yeah, it's an interesting game because it's weirdly nostalgic because of the Sesame Street-ish characters, the Muppet characters, but at the same time, it's also doing a thing. It's kind of like, it's not quite the exact same thing, but it's like a Death to Smoochie kind of experience where it's like, it's bringing up, you know, it's bringing up some stuff, although it's more, this game leans more into the cuteness and, like, the at least from the part I saw of it, the kind of cuteness of the characters and all of that, more so than Death to Smoochie does. That goes in a direction.
It's certainly not as cynical as Death to Smoochie. Yeah. I mean, like, it ends like with a really kind of, like, hopeful message.
Good.
You know? Yeah. So
Yeah, but that's like about the only other piece of media I can think of that uses like specifically that I can think of that I really like, let's say, that uses like the kids' cartoons or kids' programming in a way that, you know, is very memorable and cool to me. So
The only time that's the smoochie, but like the thing that where that has been most successful for me is Wonder Chosen. Man, that really should have gotten more seasons.
Yeah, it really should have. That was a good show. The one time I watched something.
I need to get this. So in place of the crows, like in Resident Evil, like, you know, just enemies that will generally sit perched somewhere but only attack when you like get near and will swoop around, they have hand puppets, like the smaller, you know, like smaller Elmo like versions. The other Muppets are like full body, like they walk around basically they're never clear about what exactly they are, but they're like full automaton kind of deals. But the hand ones, they speak in an Elmo like voice and they talk more. But they get like, because there's always so many of them and because they overlap, I think they can get away with making them a little bit more subtly menacing. So one of my favorite things, I walked into a room and rounded a corner and one of them was like looking right at me and said, "I'm happy to see you. Asterisk." I thought that was very good, and that nearly got under the radar, but I was like, really, did he say that?
That is definitely some Wonder Shows and flavor there.
Still have reservations about the price. It's $30 for, you know, a relatively short game. Everybody, you know, that can be up to everybody to decide where that is, but you know, it's gonna make enough money. I've never been more sure that a game is gonna make $1 million. It'll make enough money that it'll go on sale. So yeah, any questions about My Friendly Neighborhood?
Nope. I want to play it sometime when it's on sale and I'm out of Baldur's Gate.
I am preparing the legal suit to sue them for false advertising. It does not sound friendly.
The hard mode is called unfriendly mode.
That's pretty good.
The only other thing I have been playing is Master Detective's Archives Raincode.
Oh, you've been playing this too? I didn't bring it up, but yes, I played the first the very, very long tutorial.
I finished that today, actually. It's like a 3-hour long tutorial.
It's the longest tutorial.
It's so long. Do you want to talk about the basics of this, Jala? Or do you want to save it for a time when you have played more and both of us are on?
I can talk the next time about it. I haven't prepared any thoughts about it, really. I mean, like, this is definitely another Danganronpa-ish, but like, it does so many different weird things. Like, it's taking ideas of how you go through the class trials in Danganronpa and then just doing a whole separate extra thing with it that kind of feels Persona-y.
Yeah, that's the way that I would put it. So we can talk about the basics. This is a follow-up to Danganronpa. It is by the same designer from that. I forget their name and I apologize. You are solving mysteries. As usual, you are an amnesiac who is unaware of what your power is, and you wake up getting ready to board a train to like a special corporate like exclusion zone kind of thing, basically a corporate run city, in order to solve mysteries out there. And then you get involved in a mystery on the train, making it very obvious that the corporation that owns that island is not necessarily really going to be happy to see you.
These guys aren't friendly either.
Nope.
Is anybody friendly?
Well, and I like the fact that the opening mystery or whatever is on a train. And it's doing like the Murder on the Orient Express thing. Like, I'm cool with that. That's fun.
I love the subversion, without spoilers, the subversion on the Everybody Did It.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a game that takes place in phases, right? We could talk about the world and just the aesthetic stuff. Like, it's Danganronpa. Everything is over the top. Like, the bad guy so far, like the enemy detective or whatever, if you just do a search for him, just do a search for Raincode Swank, you'll see this guy. Just basically, it's like somebody went to Midjourney and typed, give me big obnoxious money Hitler.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about it too is that I play this with the Japanese audio. I swear they are not saying swank. I think they're saying spank.
Okay. Yeah.
So I wonder what his actual full name is. So
that's also the thing with it is Spike Chunsoft, so there is over sexualization and weird stuff with that. So Danganronpa, like, you've got the exploration stuff and the investigation, kind of, as I almost said, during the day, but where you're going and gathering evidence, and then you go to the classroom trial. And, you know, because that was kind of designed PS Vita forward and, you know, for like a lighter interactivity, you know, kind of thing, you were firing truth bullets by like tapping on particular words if you have evidence that contradicted them. Here, instead of a trial, after you've gone and gathered up all of the evidence, your kind of familiar, this like spirit of death that you have bound to yourself, takes you to a mystery labyrinth, which is like a Persona style
dungeon.
Yeah, like dungeon otherworld, that is like an ever shifting representation of all aspects of the case. And instead of being formatted like a trial where everybody's throwing stuff out, you're being led through this labyrinth and doing stuff that is frankly very similar to Danganronpa style, trial stuff.
Wait, is this kind of a different wrapper around palace?
Kind of.
It is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's kind of like that.
Instead of having the, you know, truth bullets and tapping on or trying to shoot the words, you have like a little like punch out or Dark Souls style like combat kind of deal, where you are dodging the fallacious arguments and trying to load up the proper evidence to slash back at the contradiction ones as they go. And there are tons of like little mini games and stuff as well, as you are trying to figure this stuff out.
Yeah, they also in those parts where you are trying to find the contradictions and defeat them, they also introduce the noise element, which was also in Danganronpa.
Yes.
And they also have like the person who is in front of you and, you know, shouting this stuff at you is a representation, like a Persona style alter world, other world version of some of the people who are obstructing your way in the case. Mm-hmm. And that person can change, or that person can come back depending upon, you know, what's going on. There's also multiple paths, and you have to be able to answer a logical question about the case as to this or this is the answer. And if you don't get it right, then you go down a dead end. And if you get it, you know, correct, then, you know, it proceeds on from there.
Yeah. The one mystery that I've seen is good. Like, the trick on it is classic this kind of game's trick.
Yeah.
You know, kind of deal. This does feel more interactive than previous ones, which were, you know, kind of limited, almost like item hunt kind of deals. Like, you are walking around like a 3D space, doing like, you know, it's almost like from the survival horror angle. Camera angle and interaction model, looking for stuff. That said, it is very linear. Like, you can't proceed until you found everything. Like, it is going to carry you along, you know, similar to like a Phoenix Wright. It's the way these things have always been, in this particular genre of mystery game. It is not like a LA Noir where you can miss evidence and lose the case and life goes on, or like an Obra Dinn or a Case of the Golden Idol, where things are relatively unguided and you're like inputting the answers. It is a more confrontational model of kind of solving these mysteries.
And good. Something else that I like about it is the fact that when you're going through, like, yes, you have to sort out all the different answers to these different questions that are posed to you, but like it doesn't feel like it's unsolvable or like you have no idea what's going on. But it also doesn't feel like, you idiot, of course the X, you know, like it doesn't it feels like a nice balance of, you know, what it's trying to give you in terms of challenge. And also when it comes to just like the ending of the segment, you end it with the same kind of, here, put together the comic that tells you the events of what actually happened. And they prompt you on each of these, like you have to do it in a certain order, like certain pieces don't unlock until you get other ones first. So you have to go through the entire comic and figure out which questions you can answer, because it, it prompts you with a question that you have to present a piece of information or whatever for. If you have that information, if you don't, you need to move on until you can unlock the piece of information you need to finish the puzzle. But it's not like as hard to interpret as like, say, the first Danganronpa, for example. It's a lot easier to understand and intuit and figure out what you need to do.
But I've enjoyed it so far. Like it has been a little bit of a you know, just trying to learn the shape of things, you know. But when it when I got to the Mind Palace mystery labyrinth or whatever, and I realized, oh, this is just a different way to do the class trial kind of thing, I felt kind of at home again. I was like, all right, yeah, just it's just different metaphors, but doing very similar stuff.
And I will say that the Persona style Otherworld realm makes me makes more sense to me than what they were doing in Danganronpa with the class trials, you know, when they were just mini gaming it up to mini game it up that doesn't actually have any real representation of anything. I mean, like, you know, at least the way that they have it set up here with the mystery labyrinth, it feels like, okay, well, you're in a weird world that's just kind of constructed of whatever nonsense. So nothing is exactly sensible in the first place. So, you know, like the expectation is a little bit different there. And I will say that, like, the part at the end of the first labyrinth that you do when you're in that 50 million hour long tutorial was actually when the characters are going up against the fortress, the final fortress. That's very funny to me how that played out. So
the valley thing.
Yeah, the whole valley thing was very funny.
God,
it's not going to be funny if they keep doing it, but like.
Yeah,
it was funny this time.
They're probably going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Also, it is one of our. It's one of us has a moral duty to go to David with the character design of Zilch Alexander, so he can cosplay that person.
I was really tempted. I don't think I sent David a screenshot, but yeah, I will have to definitely do that.
Yeah.
I was kind of waiting to see what kind of character that character was.
Yeah. Well, you find out.
Yeah, I found out. Anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
It sounds like you're not happy that you found out.
Things. Things.
Things happen. It's a kind of character. Yeah. But there's more detail and, you know, individual characters and stuff. And I think everybody's appetite for Danganronpa over the top style kind of stuff, and also, you know, getting into like pretty gross sexual and like fetish shit, you know, like that is going to be two individual tastes that is present. Along with that is like a really kind of colorful world with distinct characters and like really opinionated visual design, and that is good. But, you know, stands together.
Yeah. The one thing I would also say, too, is that although I don't give a crap about the main character in this game at all, I also am not annoyed by any of the other characters, like even even the annoying character that you're supposed to hate, the obnoxious money Hitler. Like he's a character type. Okay, whatever, shrug, move on. So far anyway, I am not annoyed by anybody, because you know that was an ongoing thing with Danganronpa games, is that every single time the characters were always turned up to 11, and that grated on me, even though sometimes, like, you know, the way they would subvert that would be good, but like you have to duke it out and wait for
you
them
still
to
have
subvert
to
it.
spend all that time. So that's Rain Code for now.
Yeah.
Yep. Fair enough.
buttons. And that's all I got.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Before we get into it, I just want to get a live reaction on here. Issue number one in Ohio got voted down.
Oh, I hadn't seen that come in. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So voted no.
Voted no. Yeah. It was like 68 to 32. It was roundly rejected.
Good. Ooh, fuck those guys.
Yeah. I talked about this last week and told people to go vote if they were in Ohio. There was an effort by the Republican Party to raise the threshold for, citizen ballot measures, like amendments to the Ohio Constitution, in advance of November's referendum on abortion. Mm-hmm. That's where we're at. That has been rejected, trying to make Ohio less Democratic. So yeah. I had been watching that and I got an alert. So we are good.
Oh man, that, I feel like, yeah, can breathe now. I have to, someone asked me about it on the internet. And it was like, what the hell is happening in Ohio? And I said, you know how football teams can call an extra timeout in the middle of the game if they're losing and have the goal line for the opponents moved arbitrarily further away? It's, you know, it's like that.
Yeah. It's like if you win one election, then you can make sure nobody else ever wins an election. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Good. Good. Yeah. Ohio, not the fascist spearhead yet.
I mean,
put that on the welcome signs.
Ohio, it didn't get as bad as it could.
Yeah.
Anyway,
when we were a swing state? That was fun. Yeah.
What is the question that you asked the nice people, Dennis?
How did you vote on issue one? No. So yeah, I wanted to know what game had the highest Molyneux delta for you. And I'm defining that as what game had the biggest difference between what was promised and what was delivered. And then follow-up question, which I think will be the most interesting point of discussion. Do you think the main culprit was the promises or the execution?
It'll be real hard not to just bring Peter Molyneux stuff to this. Because I thought of an answer, and then I was like, oh, wait, was Apple involved? Like, yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yep. I think I've got a good poll, but we'll see. We'll get there. We'll get there.
I'll get us started here with Peter, who says, this is probably a cheat because I never played the games, but Final Fantasy VII Remaster seems to have been one of those games. The promise that we seemed to get was a vast, expansive revisit to the original. Instead, we got a return to the world, but with a twist. The jury's still out for me as to whether or not it was a good thing or not. With it being a PS5 exclusive after the first, quote, expansion, it's probably not going to be played by me anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's hard to say because they announced it and everybody was so waiting for it. And then there was that asterisk of it's Midgar. Mm-hmm. And just Midgar, which is really good, but doesn't get to the things that people rave about in that game.
Yeah. You'll have to pay us again for that.
For like a whole massive other game, but yeah.
Well, sure, yeah. It's on the RPG scale of things, it is a lot of content.
Yeah. Let's see here, Jala. What does Austin say?
Austin says Rage comes to mind. Promise as a big looter shooter like Borderlands, and surprise, it's a racing game.
Yeah.
Huh. I missed Rage, and this makes me more intrigued.
I mean, Rage is kind of okay. Like,
is it like a not Sweet Tooth, Twisted Metal?
No.
Okay.
It's a first person shooter that has open world stuff, but also there are a lot of racing, racing levels, nice. Racing challenges and stuff. Yeah.
All right. No shade.
Let's see here, Dennis. What does Greg say?
Greg says, I'll go with a low-hanging fruit of it and say No Man's Sky. The game was rushed out before it was ready, and it took years to finally come close to what was promised during the game's development. Plus, the buzz around the game due to the false promises was so strong, journalists saying negative things about the game got death threats. Yeah, probably some could argue the replacement for Molyneux in many people's minds. Like, this is now the prototype for over-promising and under-delivering.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very thankful that it's gotten to a good place, though. Yeah. Like, not every game that overpromises and underdelivers eventually gets there.
Yeah, you know, sometimes all it takes is time and maybe proper project scaling and communication between publisher and marketing. Any of those could help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The hype train. Don't write it.
Curtis writes, "Hey, Peter Molyneux may have lied about some things, but at least he never removed a puddle." Sarcastic. Slash sarcastic. Sark mark. Whatever the slash S is.
Sark mark. Ooh.
Spicy. That's a thing. Yeah.
I what is this referencing? Because I missed this.
People got really, really angry that, let me see here. When the Spider-Man game for PS4 came out, people went to like a particular spot in the game and said, "Wait a minute, we were promised like this amazing graphical thing." And they pointed to a difference between the previews and the actual game, in which in the actual game, a puddle in New York City was smaller than it was in the preview.
I thought you were going to say it was smaller than it was in real life.
No. The preview showed a puddle of one size, and then gamers got real mad that it was not of the exact same diameter.
Wow.
And the other one. So we demand to be taken seriously.
Yes. You've heard of mountains out of molehills. Now you're puddles out of oceans, or oceans out of puzzles.
Jala, what does Phil say?
Phil says, and I agree, "Wonder how many times people are going to bring up Mighty Number 9. Yeah, that's a good one. That's
second
a good
coming
example.
Of Mega Man, you guys. Just wait.
You really don't hear people talk about Mighty Number 9.
No, people just kind of got disappointed and then thoroughly just left. They just turned it off and went away. They're like, oh.
That was a Kickstarter one, right?
That was a Kickstarter. I backed the Kickstarter for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, this is depressing and terrible.
Let's see here. Dennis, what does Case say?
Case says, "It's a lot better now, but the launch experience of Cyberpunk 77 was just so dramatically bad from the studio that made me think they could do no wrong after Witcher 3.
Yeah.
I think they could have come out firing, being like, guys, this is a hot mess. It's not ready. Don't expect anything. And still, because of Witcher 3, expectations would have been sky high.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a case where the execution is absolutely the problem. Like nothing they promised was out of their capacity to deliver. They didn't nail it. And that's turning out to be a little bit of a No Man's Sky thing, but first impressions are a hell of a thing.
Yep. Sales cycles, they need to die.
Yeah. And finally, we have Rookie, who says, "I don't remember how it was advertised, but most of us believed that Sekiro would be some combination of Tenchu and Dark Souls, which should have been the perfect game for me. I was looking forward to punishing that evil merchant, Patches. Instead, we got Perfectionist Simulator 2K19. What's that? You managed to sneak up on the boss and get a stealth kill? Too bad. Kill him again, face-to-face in face-to-face combat. You know what ninjas are famous for doing. Do you want to change up your build and weapon because you're having problems with the boss? Too bad. Play our way, but better, scrub." Very reasonable assessment of Sekiro in its broader context with the rest of FromSoft's recent output.
So here's a good question. I have kind of a hit list of PS4 games to play before moving on, since I still have yet to get a PS5. And Sekiro is on there. Does it belong on that list?
I think that you would enjoy Sekiro more than I did, strictly because of your affinity for character action games.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. Very cool. It is nowhere near as like fast paced and frantic as Devil May Cry or whatnot, but it is closer to that than it is to Dark Souls, and I think that you would get something out of it.
And I am the guy who plays, you know, XCOM on Iron Man at the highest difficulty and like can tolerate a little bit of bullshit difficulty spike stuff.
Yeah.
So my immunity to that is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dave also really likes that game, so
yeah.
You know, it works for some folks. Just depends on, you know, your particular predilections.
Yeah. For me, I am really surprised nobody mentioned Spore.
Damn it, Cole!
What?
You stole mine.
Sorry.
I was so proud of myself.
Yeah. No, the one that I was going to bring was Black and White, but I remember Peter Molyneux was involved in that one. So Spore, keeping in the strategy realm, Spore is what it is. Just like, I didn't even have a video of this. Like, I printed out like a transcript of Will Wright's demonstration. I think it was like 2004 when he got up at like a GDC and like talked about how grand the simulation would be and also how microscopic it would be, and just kind of made these promises about truly modeling life on every single kind of level, from molecular up to, you know, civilizational and, you know, multi-galactic civilizational or whatever, and having it come out and just be like like the Playmobil version of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Worse, I will ever, forever be spurned because I bought the character creator as a standalone thing. I was so hyped before the main game was out.
Oh, yeah.
Like they knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And like the character creator was kind of fun and zany. Like there was, that set my expectations higher, if anything. And then, yeah. Just nothing there.
Nope. So yeah, big disappointment. Probably, I don't know. It's hard to say the biggest one ever because everybody, you know, that was what, 15 years ago that came out. Mm-hmm. So eventually you just gotta let go and move on, man.
we were at the prime age to feel let down by our gaming idols.
Yeah.
Like I feel like that age, you know, last year, high school, first year, college, your fandoms are primed to be destroyed.
That was like 2009 though. Like, we were almost on our way out of college.
Was it that late?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But you were saying his GDC talk was earlier than that, right?
Oh, like, yeah,
his
GDC talk
was the hype train started early.
Yeah. Like, he got up there and made a whole bunch of big promises, and, you know.
Yeah.
Jala, I'll be curious to hear yours.
So I thought about this, and other than Mighty Number 9, which is a good answer, that also works for me, I would say AI, the Somnium Files, like the demo versus when I played the actual game. That's like the most recent thing I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Because I played the demo, and the demo presented itself as this near future dark cyber murder mystery game, which it is, sort of, but it's also really goofy and horny in ways that severely disrupt the narrative. But I didn't realize when I was playing the demo that it was a Spike Chunsoft game, and when I realized that after I bought the game, I was like, oh, that would be why. I wasn't prepared. I wasn't prepared, so that was on me, but also the demo made it look like it was going to be something else, and then I was very sad the rest of the time because I was thinking it was going to be like how it looked in the demo. So
yeah, preparation is the difference between an alive Houdini and a dead Houdini.
Because, like, I mean, obviously I play Spike Chunsoft games, but I have to be aware when I'm going into them, otherwise I will have a very bad reaction.
Right. So,
I mean, I might still have a bad reaction and then at the end of the game be either like ambivalent about the game or end up kind of liking it, but also hating it at the same time, because that's just how it is with this developer.
Yeah.
So,
guys, I think Alive Houdini, Dead Houdini is the perfect name for a Vizinov murder simulator. Like, I'm imagining like all the crazy ways you could spell it. but that's, I now want this game that doesn't exist yet.
True. Yeah, well, I hate to end on a disappointing note.
Well, we still have the end boss, so we can pull out of this. Yeah.
Oh yeah, we can. I'm not disappointed though in people who wrote in. So thank you so much, everybody who wrote in. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this. If you would like to participate in these, join the DuckFeed community group on Facebook and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, lead us off with the story. What's Sony thinking about getting into?
Smell-o-vision.
Oh. Ugh. Well, that sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah, but you know what's also weirder is that the Xbox, the Microsoft released an Xbox controller last month, special as like a prize for the Mutant Mayhem game that just released on August 2nd. They had like a contest to earn pizza-scented TMNT controllers.
Oh,
I didn't know that was a thing until I looked at this article. So like this article is talking about how Sony filed a patent for, you know, a smelly, basically a system that has a smelly component that you can put cartridges in that are similar to the cartridges that Microsoft used in these stinky Xbox controllers. You can tell I'm real jazzed about this because of the words I'm picking here, but anyway, it's supposedly they registered a patent for a system that will include a detachable dongle that you can put cartridges in, so it emits scents during certain parts during the game. So there has been other scent stuff before, not just the Smell-O-Vision, which was actually a thing, but also Microsoft was considering a scent-emitting Xbox controller previous to the ones that they just released, and Haptic Soul has a dev kit available for VR games that emits scent at certain moments. So, okay. There's no real content other than that. It's just that Sony filed this patent and it's weird. Also, those Xbox controllers are a thing. If you Google it, you will see the weird looking controllers and they apparently smell like pizza. I don't know. I kind of want somebody to tell me if they actually smell like pizza. Anyway, and that's it. But like these companies file weird patents all the time. So, I mean, this is not really big news, but those weird controllers, the TMNT controllers, those are strange.
Mm-hmm. Artificial pizza scent never smell like it always smells like zombie flesh is.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's gotten it right.
No. I remember like scratch and sniff like pizza stickers for like old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff.
Yeah.
And just, they have a rich history of scented merch, huh?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Huh. The ones that smell like vanilla when you got them wet or whatever.
It's very weird. Well, anyway, like I did drop a link for you guys to see the TMNT controllers with the little pizza sticking out of the back of it because that makes a lot of sense. I don't know. Maybe you can unplug the stinky part. I don't know.
Maybe, or you just let it run, like outside on the deck until the until it runs out of stinky juice, yes. And then you play it dry. I've never heard anybody ask for this, and it's an idea that is revisited once every like 5 years or so. It feels like, and it just. Yeah, it seems like the only possible person who could be excited about this is somebody who is envisioning getting gamers to pay repeat money for consumable scent cartridges.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Yeah. I want to be in the boardroom. They're like, you know what will really promote the turtles?
Just the most heinous... The most heinous smelling controller alive.
Oh, okay, so like I looked.
So speaking. Oh, go ahead.
I looked at the article and like you can remove the little pizza part from the article. And sorry, it's like because of the movie, and I thought there was also going to be another thing, but you have to actually like go on to game. You would have had. I mean, at this point, it's over with. Had to go on to Game Pass to like go. Mm. Register for this or whatever.
Weird,
but I don't know. Yeah. Whatever. It was for the movie. So
I want to continue talking about heinous promotions for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
If I may,
yes, because folks, there's more than one. And actually, I want to back up because I actually took the Biggs, Luke and Milo, to see this, see Mutant Mayhem in theaters yesterday, and the movie's a freaking delight.
I have heard that it's very good.
Mm-hmm. So that's as much as I'll say in this form at this time. But yeah, it's the movie is so much better than the merch and advertising for it.
Mm-hmm.
So in a really cool idea, like on paper, this is such a good idea. You can buy Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle costumes in Street Fighter VI.
Yep. Yep.
Like that's super cool. That's
makes sense.
Know, yeah. Makes total sense. Not cool is it almost as cost as much as the base game.
Oh my God.
To get a hold of them.
I didn't know that.
$15 a piece for those skins?
$15 a turtle.
That's ridiculous.
Good Lord.
There is no reason to price this that way, especially because it is promotional content.
Yeah.
Like, this is not. I'm making myself so mad. I'm coughing. Like, this is not for itself. This is to promote the movie, ostensibly. Mm-hmm. And you're still going to try to milk us for that. And people who have seen the movie are laughing at the milk us quote. But we'll get there. Yes. So I don't know why people are being this greedy. I have to imagine this is targeted at the little kids whose parents have like left the credit card purchasing turned on and aren't really paying attention.
I don't know.
And like that's the target audience.
I know a lot of people who just remember Ninja Turtles from when they were little, remember Street Fighter from when they were little, and they're playing Street Fighter 6 and they're like, hey, turtles, all right. Cool. Yeah. I mean,
I while the visual design of the movie is phenomenal, it is on par with how much of a graphical treat Into the Spider-Verse was.
Yeah. Similar style. Yeah.
Yeah. It is that good. The characters in the game, at least from the screenshots I'm seeing, look like complete ass.
Yeah, like
this is the Vanilla Ice Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, they're real chunkity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not great.
Yeah, the proportions are a little bit too human. No, I don't care for that.
These are the like adult mutant Ninja Turtles here. Yeah. So, unfortunate. It is, it's a great movie. The advertising is terrible.
Yeah. Huh. Well. Maybe they're, gosh, $15 for a skin is way too much. I was like, well, if you just wanted to be like Donatello or something. No, mm-hmm. That's still too much.
Actually, like looking at it, I prefer what these look like to what the Mutant Mayhem movie looks like.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
Yeah. I don't like the style of that movie.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Final one, and this is just very brief. I think I brought something similar last week, but they keep on releasing bangers. The Pokemon trading card game, the Game Boy Color one, is coming to Switch Online.
All right.
I'm saying this not just because that game had disappeared for a while. I think maybe it was on Virtual Console on 3DS. Or possibly on Wii U, but it became unavailable, and now it's going to be good to play it on Switch. That's a good ass game, and also we're covering that on Watch Out for Fireballs in September.
Cool.
So it is now easier than ever to play along with this. Exciting. I'm really excited because I was about ready to get started messing around with that ahead of time, and now I've got a good way to do it that will not require using a suboptimal piece of equipment.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's the stories. I think that is the segment. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Yeah, that is the show as well.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 468. Really appreciate you taking the time. If you want to help out the show, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can participate in the multiplayer at the Duckfeed community group on Facebook. And you can leave a rating or review. Those are all things that do help us in addition to spreading the word and coming back next week. Jala, what is happening at jalachan.place?
Yeah, so the last episode was a media episode, and it was about Fire Emblem as an IP, talking big strokes about Fire Emblem, what the Fire Emblem games do, what the origin of tactical RPGs looks like as a subgenre. Also, we kind of get into the weeds talking about some of the newer versions of Fire Emblem and things that we like and don't like and this, that, and the other. but it is a real good time. It was Adelaide from Back on My BS and Nick from Friday Night Gamecast on that episode. Very fun. Mm-hmm. So you can check that out if you like Fire Emblem or tactical RPGs. And the one before that was the topical episode, and we were talking about fat phobia and eating disorders. So important topics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go check it out. Dennis, how about you? Anything with Deck of Wonders?
Check it out on Amazon. Just go search Deck of Wonders Fury of Games. It'll pop right up, and you can have it in a matter of days. Yeah, that's the big one.
Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me dancing on the grave of issue one.
Yay! And then I'm Jolichon in places, including Jolichon.place.
And stick around for some titles. Eat the leg. Okay. Let's see here. Dennis, you got any?
I have two. One from early in the episode. I have hammock legs.
I also have hammock legs.
You gotta get your hammock legs. And then I also have Perfectionist Simulator 2K19, which tickled me.
Okay. Jala.
Big obnoxious money Hitler. Of course, the aforementioned hammock legs. Mm-hmm. The Playmobil version. And Alive Houdini, dead Houdini.
I'm going to correct your spelling on Playmobil. There is no E on Playmobil.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
yeah, they're not old enough to know grammar.
Well, then Playmobil is not mobile.
I always say Playmobil. I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't know the official pronunciation.
I don't either. It's fine.
Yeah. And I don't have any.
It would be weird if you did. No, the pronunciation.
Oh yes. Hammock legs gets it by votes.
I like hammock legs.
Sure, let's do it.
Okay. It is decided.